hopefully that'll be good enough.
Hi everyone, good afternoon. Hi, thanks so much for coming. My name is Susie Blair. I'm the lab and research manager of the CRC. I want to thank you all for coming for our February research colloquium. It's part of a series that we do called the Communication Research Colloquium Series. We have them monthly, sponsored by the Communication Research Center at Boston University. Today we're excited to have Dr. Nurit Reisblatt. She's a visiting research fellow at the Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California. During her postdoc at USC, she collaborated with the Media, Economics, and Entrepreneurship Program and is currently collaborating with the Center of Public Relations. Her specialty is in the tech news field. And prior to her academic journey, she worked on both sides of the fence. So she began her career in tech PR, representing international tech companies. And later, she switched sides to work as a tech journalist. These experiences led her to examine the intersection of technological innovations in journalism, which she's going to be sharing with us today. So please join me on behalf of the Communication Research Center in warmly welcoming Dr. Nurit Reisblatt.
Thank you. Thank you for the detailed introduction. Now I can skip the slides. So I want to thank you, Susie and Mina, which is not here, for organizing this talk. I'm excited to be here. And as you said, my name is Nurit. I come from USC. And today I'm going to present my studies on tech journalism. I'll summarize for you what's been done, so past research about tech news, the current research about tech PR, and a quick look at future research directions involving both. So, as she mentioned, over a career in which I was on both sides of the fence, as tech PR professional and tech journalist, I've become fascinated with the intersection of tech innovation and journalism, and it goes both ways. So how journalism is covering innovation, and how technological innovations impact the profession of journalism and PR. So a little bit of background. In the innovation ecosystem is where all the new technologies are being created and modified. And innovation journalism in the middle is the mediator between all this new stuff we don't know and don't understand, and the general public that needs to know this information and need the media to simplify it for them. Because most of people are not tech savvy enough, don't have a technical background, so then turn to the expert's advice. Please explain how it works and whether it's innovative or not. So the tech media needs to introduce, but also to criticize new technological innovations. And as technology becomes more meaningful in almost every aspect of our lives, there is an even bigger need to better understand the complex relationship about what's happening in the tech discourse, how technology has been introduced, covered, and criticized. And to understand my personal research motivation, we need to go back in time when I was in tech PR. So I was a tech spokeswoman for leading tech companies, as you mentioned, and it ranged from big international tech companies to very small Israeli startups. And what I'd done day and night is just pitch the tech media. So I worked with both tech journalists and tech bloggers. And then I noticed that a lot of the traditional media is praising the supremacy of the tech bloggers. If anybody knows what's going to happen next in technology, it's the bloggers. And I saw that a lot of articles in traditional media starts with, according to the tech blog, and a follow-up. And then it's different for the political field, where traditional media mainly set the subject for discussions, and the political bloggers, even the influential ones, mainly do the follow-up with their interpretations, their commentary, most of the time. So I checked for academic research on this specific subject, Google Scholar, and I was surprised to see and discover the lack of research on tech journalism, and specifically I didn't find any answer to who sets the tech agenda question. And eventually I recognized how little the creation of the tech agenda is being studied or taught. So I decided to investigate it myself. That was in 2008. And it initiated my research journey, aiming to fill some of those voids. So since then, as a result, my research over the past decade has focused on the various forces who shape the tech content. One of the forces is tech PR, but we'll get to that later. From 2005, we witnessed the rise of the tech blogs. The leading influential tech bloggers became the new elites, receiving 50 or even 70 million unique visitors per month. So in this first research, I aim to better understand the complex relationship between traditional media, tech blogs, and their readers. To do so, we need a theoretical background. So for the past four decades, thousands of studies have been conducted on the agenda-setting influence. The most notable one have focused on the political field. None of them addressed tech journalism, so my research filled this gap in the literature by expanding two kind of old mass communication theories, agenda setting and two-step flow communication, and I took them from the political field, the classical one, to my field of interest, tech. In a nutshell, because I'm sure you're all aware of, you know, the basic idea, so the tech two-step flow theory says that the information flows from mass media to opinion leaders, and from them to a wider crowd. So the focus is on the role of opinion leaders, those early recognizers, since they collect, filter, and promote the flow of information. The basic idea of the agenda-setting theory is that the salience of elements on the news agenda influences the salience on the public agenda. So the first level is the salience of issues, the subjects, what to think about. And the second level is the salience of attributes, so whether it's negative, positive, or neutral. During my doctoral studies, a new theoretical and practical development emerged in agenda-setting research titled The Third Level. Lei Gu, I hope I pronounced it well, named it as the network agenda-setting model. The new model suggests that not only the elements can transfer from one agenda to the other, but also the connection between subjects and connection between different attributes. So now it's not only what to think about the subjects or how to think about it, the attributes, but also how to connect things, how to link different objects and attributes to make sense of the world. And it suggested that the more likely the media mentioned two elements together, the greater chance that the audience will perceive those two elements as interconnected. And it given us researchers a more profound insight into the agenda setting process. Last theoretical slide. So other agenda setting studies examine who sets the media agenda. So now we're not looking at the influence that the media had on the public, but rather the creation of the media agenda. And one of the most major influences of the media agenda is other media. You're constantly looking what your colleagues are publishing. If it's their headline, I guess it's an important subject for me to cover as well. So this imitation is very common. And research-wise, we examine the changes in one medium agenda, whether it's precede or follow the agenda of another over time. Practically, time series analysis. So to close this part of the story, initially, according to my research proposal back in 2008, I was not going to look or use the network model because, as I said, it was only developed during my PhD process. But then, this happened. I had the honor and pleasure of meeting with Professor Maxwell McCombs, the founding father of agenda setting. And we had a thought-provoking, fruitful discussion about the future direction of his theory that he founded. And at the end, understanding his vision on the importance of the network model, I decided to add it to my research. I took a course in network analysis so I could gain this new skill set. I had four hypotheses. The main one claimed that the salience of elements, tech-related objects, will transfer from tech blogs to traditional media. As I said, covering tech requires special experience and expertise. So the study expected that the uber geeks, tech bloggers, would disseminate the tech issues and then traditional media would adapt them. Method. The quantitative method included big data analysis, network analysis, and time series analysis. And together they covered all four research questions and hypotheses. So the research basically examined the tech agenda in traditional media, the number of articles per tech keyword, and then compared it with the tech agenda on type blogs, then it's the number of posts per subject. And then I've added the public interest in text, so I use Google Trends for that. And the final complementary step was interviews with the leading tech bloggers in Silicon Valley. So just so you know, I'm not going to present all the various findings, like from Google Trends or the interviews, but rather focus on those who led the way to my current study. Okay, so which sites should I monitor, should I research in my big data tool? I wanted English language tech coverage from the US. So I compared different rankings and ranking methods. And as a result, the traditional media, including the leading newspapers, TV stations, and computer magazines. And it should be mentioned that back then it was still a thing. And the tech bloggers included the leading elite newsroom blogs. So those are the big sites like TechCrunch. But I also included independent bloggers. As I said, those Uber tech geeks can be also working alone from their home, so I didn't want to miss their influence as well. Now I don't want to use a big data tool. I have examined several leading ones from the US, and at the end I chose Sysomos and Marketwire tool named MAP, Media Analysis Platform. Highly recommend it. Now, in politics, we have the same issues repeating each, let's say, presidential campaign. So it's war, terror, healthcare, gun control, etc. What about tech? I didn't have previous keywords list to replicate, so I needed to create one by myself. So what I've done is I looked at 4 years of the tech coverage, tech stories, and this process led to 347 keywords. Tech-related topics, tech companies, tech product, tech themes, and I checked all of them with thousands of queries in the big data tool, and I looked at full year, so that resulted with 1.5 million records, articles, and posts. Findings. In the political field, we can see sometimes different things in the agenda of traditional media versus what tech bloggers are talking about. So that was very interesting to find a very strong and significant correlation between traditional media and blogs. So it was between the subgroups in each category and between subgroups in different categories crossing the main categories. So whatever group you looked at, all different media outlets reached a consensus about what tech topics to cover, what counted as newsworthy in the tech field. The outcome of this similarity is a very highly redundant news agenda. I'm not going to share you the long list of the 100, top 100 or top 50. Instead, just look at the top five. So the leading tech companies in that study are Apple, Google, Facebook, along with Microsoft, Samsung, Twitter, Amazon. Notice that the strong are getting stronger. So the same tech giants 7 years ago are now the most influential companies we have, right? In the top products, you can see who control the headlines. So it's mostly Apple products. The most trafficked stories in tech journalism are from tech industry events. And above all, the company's events. So I don't know if you've seen, but yesterday, Samsung's event, it revealed, launched its Galaxy S10 and the Galaxy Fold. That's the type of events that I'm referring to. The leading tech executives are from the leading tech companies. Tech journalism look a lot about their behavior, and it gives a lot of headlines. So that was also interesting to see. And overall, I identified a phenomenon of winners take all. Few elements achieve the majority of the coverage, and all other got considerably lower coverage. So, and all my figures look like that. So with a long tail, classic power law distribution. And from comparing all the topics, more broadened tech themes, so two traditional phenomena stood out: product journalism and positive coverage. Product journalism is the majority of news articles dealt with, as I said, products being launched. Software or hardware. other potentially important tech topics, such as censorship, cybersecurity, privacy issues, were not silent in the coverage, like, at all. Positive coverage. Although there were interesting negative stories about those tech companies, the failures and layoffs and investigations, they drew considerably less coverage. And please remember those two phenomena when I'll describe my new study. Let me illustrate that point. So in this study, I checked each big brand and their picks during the year. We have 1 year time frame, right? So I looked at each pick to identify the relevant story in the database that had timestamp. So for example, in here you can see that the massive buzz around Apple is the events, revealing the new iOS, iPhone, iPad, etc. I called it in my work hashtag Apple Madness. Stories like the terrible working condition at Foxconn with the workers' suicides, remember? Well, they got much smaller interest in both groups, traditional media in blue and tech blogs in red. So if the media hype regarding new products is there, Foxconn suicide is in there. So we thought we had a big discussion about this scandal, but the one-year perspective actually provides us the full picture. For the network agenda setting model, I followed the three basic steps. One, creating matrices based on frequency of two elements co-occurring the same headline. And my unit was a headline. It could be the actual article or other things, but having 1.5 million records, I wanted to clean the data. So I looked at co-occurrence of tech keywords in the same headline, thus huge association between them, right? Because the headline is so short. And two of the statistics is the regression analysis. It tests the similarity between the different networks. And three, visualization of the networks. And these steps illustrate the strengths of the ties. And the more frequently two tech keywords co-occur in the same headline, so the stronger the connection, thus the thicker the line in the graph. And one interesting keyword that I tracked in the big data tool was rumor, because we have tons of them in the tech field. The factory workers are constantly giving prototypes, not ready to release products to tech bloggers. It's very common. And that's always the flow of information. So the factory workers take this prototype to tech bloggers say, rumor, this is going to be the next product next month. And then traditional media, according to the tech blog, it's going to be the new product. So that's constantly in my database. So the figure here just illustrates that, because you take a product and you merge it with the word rumor, and the ranking of products in traditional media changed in accordance with the blogs. It wasn't the general rankings of products. So it illustrated how a connection between keywords can transfer from one communication channel to another. But the main finding of that research were from the grandeur causality test, the time series analysis. So the first analysis revealed that the tech coverage on blogs explained. You say grandeur cause, but actually explain or predict the coverage in traditional media, significantly and strong. All p-result below 0.005, and I'm not going to show you the tables, I'm just saying that was strong and significant. The results of the second analysis were not statistically significant at all. The tech coverage on traditional media did not explain tech coverage on blogs. So, well, the classic theory points the information flow direction from traditional media. This study provided empirical support for a role reversal. Because now, it indicated that tech journalists follow bloggers in covering aspects of tech issues, and that they rely on blogs as news sources for their own tech news reporting. Additional findings were from Google Trends, and the web user followed the media hype, and after the stories were published, searched for additional information, mainly Google News, not the regular Google, but Google News. And it demonstrated their reliance on the expert insight. There's a buzzword spinning around we want to know more about this story, Google News. Okay? And in the timeline, it's always like a few hours, few days after tech stories were published. So in conclusion, this past study indicated that the Uber geek tech bloggers like look and filter and choose the tech issues and make their interconnections, set the traditional media agenda, which in turn transfer the salience of those topics and their associations to the general public, who's interested in specific tech topics. And the practical implication was that when tech companies and their PR firms are looking how to best promote their products, tech bloggers were found to be the efficient channel. So it's recommended to start with them. To close this part of the story, some of the findings published in a book edited by Professor Maxwell McCombs and Dr. Lei Gu, The Power of Information Networks, New Directions for Agenda Setting. It's the perfect guidebook to understand, study, and teach the third level. Highly recommended. Moving forward to tech PR. So there are three findings in the initial study that guided my postdoc, my current study. So I've mentioned them to you. It's the consensus, winners take all, positive coverage, product journalism. All of them together suggest there's an outside influence on the tech bloggers and journalists, and it became clear. After the traditional media tech blogs users examination, the next required step is to combine the different media outlets all together and to check the outside influences. It was also based on the main criticism of tech journalism, the influence of corporate PR, and the non-investigative nature of the tech coverage. In 2015, a tech reporter commented, "A smart young person in the Valley thinks being a reporter is basically being a PR person. Reporters who write favorably about companies receive invitations to everything, critics don't." And in December 2016, Recode editor Kara Swisher stated, "In 2017, journalists have to be tougher on everybody. We have to stop being so supportive." Specifically, I plan to explain the new network agenda building model to tech PR. So what is this new model? In the book that I've just shown you, Professor Spiro Chiasas suggests and recommends to integrate the new network agenda setting model and the agenda building research tradition. So now the focus is on the corporate press releases and the corporate agenda building power. So during my first year of postdoc last year, I initiated a tech PR research group to do exactly that, examining the promotional style in press releases versus the published content in the tech media. I compared numerous big data tools, and at the end, I chose a web-based open source media monitoring tool, Media Cloud, by your neighbors, MIT and Harvard. Just like in previous research, I collected a full year of tech coverage, but this time, all of 2017. And regarding the coverage of the big tech companies, the big tech, okay? And that resulted with more than 250,000 records, articles, and posts. Then I analyzed each peak in the timeline to identify the specific buzz story. So you can see that with Apple, for example, 2017, just like 2012, major peaks are its product events, unveiling the new iOS or the new iPhone, product journalism, business as usual. In December, though, Apple had Batterygate. You remember Batterygate? It's when it finally admitting it's intentionally slowed down older iPhones. Now, that's a big deal for Apple, and it continues to be important today with all the lawsuits against Apple. But you can see that compared to the vast amounts of the events, this is better again. Okay? So again, the 1 year perspective shows us that it wasn't that big compared to the product launch. Okay? Uber, on the other hand, had a busy year with a wide variety of scandals, ranging from the famous allegations of culture of sexual harassment and discrimination it was a few months before the Harvey Weinstein, and it marked the beginning of the Me Too movement. And there was a video of the CEO, Travis, fighting with an Uber driver, a data breach affecting 57 million users, tons of illegal things, and Travis, the CEO, was forced out. He was replaced by a very nice guy, Dara. This timeline of scandal is painful, but in the short term. Because Uber succeeded to overcome all the delete Uber things in the long term. The news cycle put Uber out of the spotlight as it moved on to other companies. Which companies? Exhibit A, Facebook. Facebook had a terrible year of bad news in 2017, the year of my analysis, but then came 2018 and, you know, it went from bad to worse, right? But looking at 2017, in April we had Facebook murder. It's a terrible name for a company to have a murder tied to its brand, but that was how it was covered, Facebook murder. It's the Cleveland shooting video on Facebook Live. But the real turning point for the tech companies and Facebook was after Donald Trump was elected president. The media began reporting on the fake news phenomena with greater interest, blaming the tech companies for spreading it widely. So the big story became the Russian interference with the election. And along with Google and Twitter, Facebook testified in front of Congress. Damaging democracy, that's another level of scandal, a whole different scale. And this is how traditional media covered it. And now I'll show you how tech blogs covered it. So you see the election up there, right? The testimony in front of Congress, blogs. This small peak. The reason the peak is much higher in traditional media, that's with a lot more coverage, is due to the political importance. The broader discussion, the social implication, you know, US democracy. And traditional media is leading those debates. So I kept the separation between tech blogs and traditional media. It wasn't my first intention, but the data kind of forced me to compare them as it presented interesting differences. Another example, Google. So the I.O. conference peak is product journalism, and the other major peak is its scandal regarding the spread of fake news after the Las Vegas shooting. But please look at their another famous scandal, the sexist memo. So quick reminder, why there aren't many women in Google? Apparently due to their natural inferiority of the female brain, and women are not fit to work in tech. And the employee, the engineer who wrote this memo was fired, and that, you know, urged another controversy about him being fired, but that happened for Google. And this is how tech blogs covered it. Again, a very, very small peek, how traditional media covered it. The highest peak. And the reason is the importance of the story in general. So again, the social issues like discrimination, diversity in the workplace, and beyond. And traditional media is leading also those debates. Using a one-year perspective, the research discovered a shift in what's being covered in the tech section. Tech companies' peaks of coverage were no longer just the flattering, cheerleading product journalism that the companies were used to, but rather various negative stories entitled as the techlash. And it turned into a new moment of reckoning by both the media, regulators, and the tech companies themselves. And it marked the end of a long tech press honeymoon. And in this new techlash trend, more and more headlines in my database presented this line of thought. Tech giants, once seen as saviors, are now viewed as threats. And one article perfectly explained, the world is not as forgiving of Silicon Valley as it used to be. This one is my favorite. Silicon Valley's tax-avoiding, job-killing, soul-sucking machine. And the image. So, pivot is coming. coming from years of being a startup mentor, I'm perceiving everything as startup, so I perceive my study as a startup. And it needed to pivot to a more relevant product. So instead of the initial idea to compare positive press releases with the actual tech coverage, as flattering or not, I've come to realize that the need is to examine how tech companies were forced to defend themselves, right? They were forced to change their strategy into crisis management. So I came out of my comfort zone with all the recent tradition of agenda setting, agenda building, and explored new literature for me, crisis management, corporate apologia. And I also needed to change the method, because in response to crises, the media is obligated to publish them the exact response, right? You need to copy-paste it. You're not allowed to change anything. So it goes without saying that the content will be identical. So now the interesting stuff is in analyzing the crisis responses and to identify themes emerging from the data. I highlighted the key sentences of all the press releases and corporate posts and corporate blogs about the scandals, and here's the interesting picture that I got in that process. Let's start with the leading apologetic company in 2017, Facebook. So the first story was the Facebook murder. Zuckerberg said, we know we need to do better. We have a lot to do here. And after the fake news about Las Vegas shooting, we are working to fix the issues that allowed it to happen in the first place and deeply regret the confusion this caused. Russian interference. For the ways my work was used to divide people rather than bring us together, I ask forgiveness, and I will work to do better. In a later update about fake news, the company stated, overall, we're making progress, but there's much more to do. We'll be redoubling our efforts in 2018, not knowing this would be 2018. After the ad buyer cuts due to extreme content, we also have it today, by the way, Google responded with, we deeply apologize. We can do a better job. We know we can and must do more. Please notice the reoccurring themes. And after a backlash on how YouTube points kids to disturbing and violent videos, Google published a post entitled, Expanding Our Work Against Abuse of Our Platform, and said, we're taking those actions because it's the right thing to do. And after the fake news about the Las Vegas shooting, we'll continue to make algorithmic improvements to prevent this from happening in the future. Russia election interference is interesting with Google because September 7, Google downplayed the whole problem. We've always monitored for abuse and violations of our policies, and we've seen no evidence this type of ad campaign was run on our platforms. Afterwards, in October, Google found tens and thousands of ads bought by Russian linked entities. So the new statements shifted to taking a deeper look, to investigate attempts to abuse our system, working with researchers, etc. Twitter. So regarding Russian interference, spam, bots, hate content, fake news, and all of them together, Twitter posted few improvements and stated, we are proactively taking action. We have heard your concerns. We agree that we must do better to prevent it. As long as there are people trying to manipulate Twitter, we will be working hard to stop them. Sounds familiar? Our work on those issues will never be done, and we will continue in our efforts to protect Twitter against bad actors of networks of malicious automation and manipulation. Those were just a few examples. So what we've seen was that different tech companies, different tech scandals, and yet the PR responses were very much alike. Okay, so this study identified tech crisis response strategy, and I simplified it to this tech PR template. Victim-villain framing. So all of them are saying the same story, storytelling. We've built something good, with good intentions, great policies, previous good deeds, but our platform, product, service was then manipulated, misused by bad, malicious actors. Then partial responsibility, everybody apologizing, right? We apologize, ask for forgiveness, we need to do better. They say sorry, but it's partial responsibility. And why? Number one, okay? Good intentions, bad actors, we're the victim here. Proactive, we are currently working on those immediate actions to fix it. And looking forward, we are working on those steps for improvements, minimizing the chances that it will happen again. But it's happening, again and again and again and again. So one main criticism of this strategy is the manipulated us part. As Kara Swisher, editor of Recode, stated recently, the Russians did not hack Facebook. They were customers of Facebook. They used it the way it was built, to maximize engagement, machines for virality. So the new criticism is by taking the role of the victim, the companies don't admit that perhaps the bad actors did not misuse the platform, but rather used them as intended. And also they do the right thing only when they are forced to. The apology tour also backlashed. For example, Professor Tufekci stated regarding Facebook, the constant repetition of sorry, we meant well, we will fix it this time, to refer to what is basically the same betrayal over 14 years, should no longer be accepted as a promise to do better, but should instead be seen as but one symptom of a profound crisis of accountability. So in conclusion, those findings also showed us something very interesting to communication researchers, specifically agenda setting, because now traditional media outlets are leading everything, the scoop, the tech scandals, the techless discussions. So what I found in my previous study was the information flow only when we deal with product journalism, and this hasn't changed. If you look at Samsung's coverage last night, again, tech bloggers, first row, hands-on with products, they're doing it very well. It hasn't changed. But when it comes to investigative journalism, exposing the tech scandals, traditional media provide an evidence to its important role. So meanwhile, those dedicated tech bloggers who may have better understanding on how those tech companies work, we're still focusing on covering product announcements instead of the broader civic concern. But if we look at the beginning of 2019 as any indication, we can see a shift, as they also starting to join the tech-less trend. For example, the story regarding Facebook research app with all its data gathering was investigative journalism made by the tech blog TechCrunch. Okay, so they're joining. And the research also proposed new definition to tech news and tech PR. So for years, the tech companies avoided scrutiny and their innovation was mostly celebrated. And then the scandals emerged. Trump won the presidential election, was the turning point, and everything became political, everything. And tech companies were flooded with issues of election interference, fake news, propaganda, sexual harassment, and more. News organizations, mainly traditional media ones, sensing the rise of a tech lash, set their sight on Silicon Valley's most powerful companies and sought out scandals, mimicking their approach to politics. And as tech news became more political and critical in sentiment, tech PR needed to react accordingly, to become more political as well, to adjust to the new rules, and to be more defensive. So the first piece out of this research, the reboot of tech PR, was published last November in USC's new Relevance Report 2019. It's available online for a free download. Now, the public reaction is very interesting. It's not in the scope of my current, you know, big data analysis, but look at those figures. In 10 years, which company will we say was net negative for society? Facebook, almost 60. far behind. Amazon with 11. Which of the following companies do you trust the least with your personal information? Facebook, 56. Far behind Google with 5. And that was just weeks after the Cambridge Analytica scandal. It's important to say. So the PR nightmare caused a reduced trust, damaged Facebook brand and reputation, but all the criticism to affect only the company's public image, not its usage, not its business models, not its profits. We didn't stop using Facebook. It claims 2.3 billion monthly active users, and recently the company published its last quarter results. Just look at the numbers. Growth, revenue, profits, number of advertisers. So Facebook business remains strong. So even if the brand was beaten to death by countless scandals, it's still strong, stronger than ever, always growing. So the honeymoon is over, except when it comes to making money. And we may have growing worries about the power of tech companies, but not enough to make us quit them. Their products are so central into our lives that tech boycott is not really an option or effective. And the image of Silicon Valley is certainly taking a hit. But the reality is that we, the customers, all of us in the room, are constantly voting for them. Even as we say, we trust them less. Trust is down. We invite it deeper into our lives. We depend on them. They're not going anywhere. And moreover, they're expanding, acquiring the best human capital available. So the sad truth is that the news cycle continues, move to the next story, and we forget. Tech companies rely exactly on that, on our short attention span to distract us from their various scandals and crises. So overall, the negative sentiment is here to stay. Just look at this brand new news magazine piece about digital pollution. So as I said, nowadays all journalists, tech journalists, tech bloggers, are not focusing on, you know, cheerleading, but rather holding the big tech accountable. We can only expect it to expand in the years to come. So being in the intersection of tech news and tech PR, I believe my hands will be full. Based on the new research results, the following short-term goal is to further shed light on tech companies' strategic communication efforts in general and their crisis response strategy in particular. I plan to investigate the turning point in tech PR from different angles. So for example, I would add interviews with tech PR firms and spokesperson. And second, I'll expand the scope and collect a few years of corporate communication, aiming at in-depth examination of even longer period of time. And I pursued those questions around tech scandals as I believe that in this new era of reckoning regarding the big tech ramification on society, big tech power, examining the specific tech discourse with all its changes is even more crucial. In long term, I aim to utilize the brand new predictive analytics tool for media and PR studies. And I call it AI-based media monitoring, machine learning, deep learning, and predictive analytics for emerging trends. And I'll explain. So, what led to this idea is my previous and current findings on the tech coverage ritual. Okay, so the emerging tech scandals. The studies identify trends in the tech coverage, such as peaks in product launch, which repeat annually. For each tech company, there are the special events that receive all the media hypes. If other stories are emerging, different timing, negative sentiment, artificial intelligence can identify the sudden change based on past patterns and indicate that there is an emerging scandal on the way. So the goal is to leverage the predictive feature of AI to first provide better insight for decision making by strategic communications professionals, and second, to give researchers more accurate measurement of the journalistic and PR trends. And both public relations practice and research need to accept that AI is not only here already, but that the professional ramifications are coming whether we are all ready or not. and I've already seen how smarter tools help improve my own big data analytics. And when I say that it's already here, I refer, for example, to those existing tools that are using AI machine learning and keep on improving. They're all media monitoring tools, influencer identification, social listening, those type of tools. And I'll give you an example. In my past studies, using various media monitoring tools, I had a frustrating problem with a specific fruit, the apple.
Let's talk about apples. There are so many conversations about them. Apple trees, apple blossom, apple pie, apple juice, the big apple, apple Martin, and many, many more. It's pretty cool, but if you're monitoring the brand Apple, that's a lot of irrelevant mentions. As a marketer, to make sense out of all that clutter would be difficult and very time consuming. But AI can filter that noise quickly and get you brand insights faster. Introducing the Talkwalker AI engine. You can train it in minutes just to find what is relevant to your brand and what isn't. And the AI engine will extrapolate your results across your entire dataset. Using a simple Boolean, you get just 90% accuracy. With the new method, we now get a phenomenal 99.5% accuracy in just 30 minutes training. More relevant results in less time with no technical know-how needed. Forget Booleans. The Talkwalker AI engine, automated human intelligence for faster, more accurate brand insights.
So, knowing I'm going to keep monitor tech brands, including Apple, you can just imagine my enthusiasm getting to know this tool. So in sum, I'm in my second year of postdoc and I'm finishing writing those articles which present different theoretical backgrounds and discussions about the study implications. So the first one described the shift, the turning point. It's not just tech anymore. The second one focuses on the crisis communication, corporate apologia, sorry, we need to do better. And the third is dealing with my future research direction, predictive analytics for PR practice and research. It's a new conceptual article explaining which PR areas would benefit from AI. I would love to hear your thoughts. This is my blog and my UEC email, and you're more than welcome to contact me. Thank you. Right on time, right?
Yeah. So we have about 10, 15 minutes for questions.
It's overwhelming. I'm sorry.
When you were speaking about tech blogs, I wanted to know if you've noticed a rise in tech blogs because of the advancing tech blogging.
About what?
Have you noticed a rise in tech bloggers because of the advancing tech blogging?
Sorry. Again?
Have you noticed a rise in tech bloggers mm-hmm. because of the advancing tech market?
Tech what?
Market.
Oh. No, actually, I think their rise is due to other things. So yes, they were tech-wise, they were faster, cooler. Their sites looked better. The design, they used tech better. To report tech, okay? So that was their, we were not in newspaper, they were not old. They used videos much before traditional media did. But I think what people were actually looking at them for information was the personal writing style, so it's the actual content. They just wrote differently. They were more personal. This is my experience with the new iPhone, and here's me with it, telling you what I like to do with it. And you may be related to that or not, but it's personal, and you can relate to that. And people were attracted to that. And basically, why 50 million unique users per month? You don't know you read a tech blog. You just looked for the new iPhone or whatever. And the first results were their content, videos, and explanations, which they did very well. And this is why they, you know, were better than traditional media doing that.
I have another question.
Yes, sir.
When you showed your graphs with Apple and Google and Uber and Facebook, how did you find that information?
So it's the number of articles and posts during the year. And let's say on a given day, A week ago, Samsung had, in total, I don't know, 1,000 articles about it. Yesterday, he had like 100,000 articles about it because it launched a new product, right? So you can see on a given day, tons of media outlets reporting the launching of the product. So it's a numerous, articles and posts covering something. And then, I can't look at the full year. What's interesting for me, specifically from a agenda setting mindset, is the salience of issues that everybody is talking about. So the one story that gets 1,000 is not interesting as the story that gets 1,000 or million stories. So you want to look at the case studies that are in the peak. So this is why I identified each peak to see what was the story behind it, and then like more narrowing it down to just look at those stories because they are the interesting ones, what everybody was talking about. You know. Yes.
Do you think that there's a bigger problem with like content regulation on the internet, and that when something goes wrong with these giant companies, and that's why it becomes such a big deal because they're so big and there's so many problems? Kind of.
That's a great question. I don't know if you know, yesterday Mark Zuckerberg was here, but not really here, but Harvard. He was interviewed with the Berkman Klein professor of law, actually, Jonathan Zertin, I think he pronounced his last name. Anyway, he had like 1 hour and 40 minutes with Mark Zuckerberg exactly about that, content moderation, Facebook, hate, you know. And it was interesting to see, and I was so sorry I wasn't there, but I missed it. So you should watch it because it's an interesting conversation exactly about having this huge problem that nobody can fix. It's not fixed, nobody can fix it. Everybody blames the tech companies for that, and they don't know how to fix it. They're using tons of, billions of dollars in AI, machine learning, thousands of employees. And there is no one good answer on how to do it because the way Mark looks at it is there are always going to be those bad actors who's going to misuse and do harm. We need to amplify the good and minimize the bad. We will not disseminate 100% of the bad. We can't. Just the millions of pieces of content a minute, it's just mind blowing. You can't. But you can try to do better. Again, it's repeat to their crisis strategy because, again, they don't have answers and regulations. Is not all, not always a good solution. Getting rid of the ad targeting business model is, give an alternative is not that good. So the discussion is really problematic because nobody has the real answer, not the journalists, not researchers, not the tech companies, not the regulators. Everybody discussing it big time now currently, but nobody has as you said, it's an unsolvable problem that we're all blaming tech, but tech is just something that human is doing and using. Humans were bad way before it, and we'll be good and bad after it, so, yeah.
Any other questions or thoughts?
Yeah.
So you briefly talk about public reaction at the end of your presentation, so you seem to suggest public thoughts about these products are not the same thing as the behavior, right? So now, seems like we are quite critical about a lot of brands, but we are still using it. But I'm very interested in learning, so have you seen anything or do you plan to do to see if media's coverage or blog coverage have any impact on the public opinion about these products?
So, no, but there are tons of surveys that now being published about the declining trust, but as I mentioned, and this is why I'm showing it, even though it's not in the scope, what I'm doing, that we can talk day and night about crises and reputation and how the brands are being hit by the media constantly. People don't care. Advertisers don't care. Nobody's care enough to do something because we can't. It's too big to fail. It's too big to fight. You can't. So you give up, I think, in advance and just use them because it's free and it is in your life and you forget and move on. So this is why I have made those slides even though it's not in the scope because I think it's very interesting to see that the real impact is that after the slides of the quarterly result of Facebook, the same week we had Google and Twitter and all the other big brands publishing their reports, everybody had tens of thousands of growth, every parameter. Revenue, as I said, profit, everything. So, and they had this scandalous years of tons of bad coverage, negative sentiment, whatever you want in my data is negative. Day to day, we use the iPhone, I use Waze, belongs to Google, I use everything. I mean, I have the tech knowledge, I'm tech savvy to block it. I can do like a VPN and they won't follow me. I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to do the effort to fight the surveillance machine because, yeah. So, yeah. Yes,
I was wondering, in your earlier research when you were looking at tech blogs and mainstream tech media, if you noticed or looked into differences with tech blogs that are more of a general audience as opposed to those that are primarily read within the industry. So I know my research focuses more on games, and there are definitely blogs about games that are read by consumers, and then those that are read by designers, and that they have very different issue saliences. Yes. I'm wondering if you can observe that more narrowly.
Yes, definitely. That's a very good point. So the pool of tech blogs that at the end were included in my research included both, all types. So what I looked for when I said different ranking methods is not just the unique visitors per month, which I said it's tens of millions, but also the incoming links. And let's say a blog is not that visited, but all the other professionals and media outlets link to it. Okay, so they look at those discussions that are important to talk about and cite. So also blogs that are more for professionals, but there are incoming links from the big, you know, media and experts, also were included in that research too, right?
Anyone else?
Yes, please.
Do you think that they're so big and powerful that just basically any negative press or scandal isn't gonna knock them down at that point, the big five?
I mean, you thought about after Cambridge Analytica that Facebook is doomed or something, but it took like 2 months to have they're stuck in the same number, users' growth. So what else do you need more than Cambridge Analytica? So each and every scandal, you think, oh, that's the worst. It's not. I mean, I can't imagine. I'm sorry. Depressing, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think they know it because, I mean, they are putting, we should tell it, the past 2 years, specifically the past year, they're putting tons of efforts in improving not just the policies and their algorithms, but really doing better. They have huge discussions with regulators, huge discussions with researchers, with you know, fact checkers, the third parties. They collaborate with them. They're doing huge efforts. So they're doing that. We need to give it to them. But as I said, they can't really fix it. So scandals, if journalists are really looking to pick it up, will have daily. It won't affect, you know. It'll be a fraction of the bad compared to the good, but they will talk about the bad.
If you don't mind, I have another question.
Thank you
for your previous answer. Going to the other end of your presentation, thinking about predictive analytics within this field, do you have any concerns about algorithmic transparency, especially because a lot of these media monitoring tools, the classifiers that they use are proprietary, and so we don't really have a clear idea of how they work or even how they're being validated?
Yes, so I'm always being asked about it because I'm AI enthusiastic. I use and tested tons of new AI tools, and they always go, oh, what about the ethics? What about the accountability? What about everything else? Specifically with media monitoring, it's less important because I'm looking for the, you know, articles and posts, the headlines that, you know, it's in the media. I can use Google News for, you know, trends, things like that. So I think that the ethical issue is less problematic in the specific case that I chose, but of course there is a huge ethical discussions all around AI, algorithmic biases, tons of it. And again, specifically what I'm doing, I'm not saying a huge story, but there is a huge story about it, definitely.
I was asking less on the level of ethics and more in terms of using it for research, ensuring that the classifications are valid.
Oh, so yeah. All the tools I'm using, as again, I'm a tech geek, so I'm enjoying it. are not like proper academic ones that there are tons of researchers are using. So we didn't go through the all of that. Now I understand your question, sorry. So yes, I'm using tools that are for the industry, not for academic research. It's their goal, it's how they publish themselves, it's how they present themselves. We're for the industry, and they're saying which type of practices in the industry it's being used for. And then I'm joining as a researcher, but it's not for me, the tool is not for me. I'm doing it because I believe in two things. First, so the interdisciplinary research that I'm doing is both, you know, my school, but also data science, business schools, so all the places that have AI labs, I've tried to collaborate with them, that's first, and introduce them to things from the industry that maybe they don't know. And the second thing is the transdisciplinary approach of saying we need to work with the industry to collaborate as much as we can. I truly believe that because I'm from there, I'm in there. Just a minute ago I was a tech journalist, I mean, I'm in there. I can't leave the tech industry that I'm deeply intertwined with. So I guess this is why it's my preference, and I think it's good to make this synergy. I think it's beneficial for both sides. Like, you know, check and balances, maybe it's good to do,
Yeah, we probably have time for like one more question if it's quick.
Sorry, yeah.
I actually have a question about the agenda setting process and the methods you're using. It's one of the problem about graduate consultancy is the lack. So I'm wondering whether the working pattern of traditional media and blogs, because a lot of blogs are updated based on like hourly basis or something. So how did you determine the lag that you're using, and how would the emergence of tech blogs influence, in your opinion, influence the news production pattern in traditional media?
Brilliant question. Thank you for asking that. So what I've done, and I'm not a statistical person, I was with consultant with huge expert in grandeur causality, mainly one from Germany, which is his specialty, grandeur causality and agenda setting, Professor Brucius from Germany. So what he told me is that I need to have, I don't remember the specific names, but many tests we need to run in the system to decide about the lag. So it is problematic because tech bloggers do use, you know, publish tens of publications compared to smaller amounts the traditional media does. So we tried all of them. We tried a week, 1 day. We tried like all options until like the system and the results were good. And this is what I used. I hope I answered.
So you end up using a day or an hour?
So I have few that are 7 days. I have few that are days, which we tested a few of them, and we showed there's every result was significant and strong. So that we showed that was again back then. I think now you need daily and even less because of the past, you know, the fast news cycle is much different than 7 years ago. It changed. So now it will be more, I think, challenging. Yeah, definitely.
So it's about 4:30. I don't want to keep everyone too long.
Okay.
You could just join me again in thanking
Dr. My pleasure.
Thank you so much. And thanks to you all for coming too. We're having another one of these research colloquiums next month on March 20th. Chris Wells, who is a new professor at the Emerging Media Studies Department, will be presenting on media.